Thank you for listening to Internet Boyfriends. Listening to Internet Boyfriends.
She's jealous, isn't she?
No, I don't think so.
To Internet Boyfriends.
We are really bad on staying on top. I fucking apologize to any listeners that think that we're organized in any fucking way.
And you're listening to Internet Boyfriends.
The Nazis are back, and they're flying over, about to bomb fucking Toronto, duck and cover.
Krampus! Like, just
fucking... Yeah, like, I wish I had a better way of describing that so I didn't sound like a fucking racist. Like,
it's terrible!
I'm a big fan of pickles.
I'm telling you what I learned from television and Wikipedia.
She really likes how I say audio.
I know how the internet works.
Internet Boyfriends. Yeah, obviously. Oh, there we go. I figured out what it was. Okay, I just had to disable my virus program.
Oh, those are a pain in the ass.
Yeah, that was all of a sudden. It's been freaking out. It's going to record fine, though, with me calling you, or that doesn't really
matter? Doesn't
matter.
All it does is it captures any output and feeds it through to the recording, so...
Oh, that's fucking genius. Yeah. This is fucking the future, man. This is amazing.
This is what those fucking Abe guys have to do for their Skype calls. Because I listened to the most recent episode, as promised.
Okay.
And they had some guy, Joey D, call in, and they just had the mic picking up whatever's coming through the speakers. I was like, this is terrible.
What the fuck are they doing? No. Back the fuck up. They had a Joey on the show before me. Yep. Now I'm, Jesus, yep. Now I'm pissed, yeah.
You will be Joey Jesus. Number two.
Joey number two. H. Fuck. I don't mean to be Joey H. Damn it. That sucks. Well, hey.
You can be Joey Balls.
Well, actually, that came up this week. I was kind of going over. People were talking about, like, Joey versus whatever. And it really is. It's a weird divide that I don't know. I guess people online call me Joey, but a lot of people call me Balls, like, in real life.
Really?
So, yeah. Totally. I try to explain to people, Mr. Balls is not a nickname that I gave myself. Like, I don't just sit around and I'm like, I want to be named after testicles. That's, like, it is the kind of person I am that I wouldn't mind being named after testicles. It's why I use the name, but it's not my idea. It wasn't my idea. It was from Matt. It was a thing with Matt's work, and I'll probably tell that story some other time, but... It had to do with that, and people, like, for example, when Rachel and I were dating, people would call her Mrs. Balls.
I remember
so,
that.
So, yeah, that did not go over well.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, like you'd assume. So, hey, I gotta do the intro. I gotta keep on this shit.
Yep.
So, hello and welcome to another episode of Internet Boyfriends. I'm Joey, and with me is my internet boyfriend, your internet boyfriend, the birthday boy... Ryan.
Hi. Yeah.
You're supposed to say something about, like, you're glad to be 30 or, like, soon
to be
30.
I am not 30 yet. I have 2 hours left of 29-ness.
For now.
Yes.
By the time anyone listens to this,
because I'm sure we'll probably end up recording past my birthday. I am currently 29. I will be 30 by the time you listen to this. And yeah.
I don't know what. Yeah, you do need to drink. I'm staying sober this time. Okay. I've learned my lesson from last week. I don't think I've drank that much in a long. Like I didn't drink that much for New York Comic Con, and I haven't really been drinking for a while before that. So that's the thing. Like I'll have a beer every once in a while, and I do drink, and I hate to give people the impression, because I think George or somebody mentioned that to me at New York Comic Con, and they were like, you don't drink. I said, no, I do drink. I just don't drink often. And I think we'll kind of explain more about that later.
Yeah.
But that's what it is. And so last week I was just – I was laying on the floor after we got finished. And I'm just laying there just like, I got to get my shit together because I got to edit these bitches. Because immediately once we announced on Twitter that we were done, it seemed that there was some sort of a response back that people wanted to listen to what we had done. And it was like, all right, I'll edit this bitch, and in an hour I'll go to bed. And then 6-7 hours later, at like 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, I finally got up and went to bed and everything. So hopefully, the sound should be better this time.
Yeah, now that we've upgraded our recording software, we should have a much easier time actually making this work so that I don't sound like I have, like, I'm Darth Vader and he doesn't sound like he's super quiet.
You'll have a much easier time uploading it to the server so that I can edit it.
Yeah.
That's what it's going to be. Yeah. So I guess I was thinking, because I don't know what the schedule is going to be, because obviously we got three in the tube right now. We got this one we're doing. We got the Q&A episode, which should be, I think, we're going to do the Q&A episode Christmas week, because I figure that'll be a good Christmas present for everyone. Yeah. So maybe actually, you know what? This will go up this week. So, I guess we're going to more or less do these in order. We'll do this, and then we'll do Q&A, and then we'll do the end of the year episode. So that's our schedule, if anyone was wondering, thinking out loud here. That's what we're going to do. So this week is kind of a thing where I wanted to go back and talk about some stuff and things of that nature. More importantly, I wanted to at least start this off with pointing out that you're turning 30.
I am turning 30.
Yeah.
Shut up. It's
thankfully
most of my friends are over 30, so I'm the last amongst them to turn 30. But then I see, like, I always get a little jealous at people I find famous and or success, mostly people whose talent people who are talented or have succeeded in where their talent leads them that are younger than me. Like, yeah. Ryan Stegman is younger than me. Actually a few comic artists are younger than me, which upsets me.
Yeah, comic artists is a different thing, because like a lot of those, I think that falls into the idea that you need 10 years to become like a genius, like a master of your art,
or 10,000 hours.
Yeah, 10,000 hours. So I think for an artist, that's totally doable once you hit, you know, 18, 20 years old. Like I'm always shocked. And I know what you're saying. I'm always shocked to see I'm 26 now, and
for too long.
Yeah, when you said 30, I was thinking, I'm like, holy shit. Because the other day, somebody said, how old are you? And I said, 23. Because in my head, I'm 23. I just stopped at that point. Like, I just
know
didn't,
that feeling.
Like, I haven't matured since 23. Well, I shouldn't say that. I shouldn't say I haven't matured since 23. I think I've matured a lot since 23.
Oh,
and a lot of shit has changed since I've been 23. So it's – I don't know. I mean, I in my head, I'm kind of stuck on 23, and I'm sure that'll kind of kick over. I think – is that maybe the shock of being 30, is that you finally now you have to kick it over in your head and say – like, this fucking odometer's been broken for so long, it's time to update it. So
it's not a huge deal. Honestly, it's not. Tomorrow I'm going to be the same as I was today.
Yeah.
But, and I haven't moved into a new, like, age bracket on those forms. It's usually, like, 26 to 34 or something. Like, I'm still...
Oh, I just did that. And that kills. That fucking kills.
Oh, yeah. It's like, oh, damn it. I'm in a new, like, age class.
Yeah.
This blows. But I'm still in the same age class. So I have... Usually, I'm sure some will be 25 to 29 or whatever. But for the most part, I'm still in the same age class. And like I said, most of the people I know are older than me now.
Yeah.
Growing up, like, I was among the older group, but now the most people I know are older, so it's okay. Having an older girlfriend helps for that.
Yeah. Even the other night I was thinking about that, because I've always been the youngest in every group ever, and now I'm still kind of the youngest, but we've made some new additions to the group of friends, so... Yeah. Obviously, I've been friending too many people. I need to friend more people on Twitter that are older so I can kind of move that the other direction. But that's a whole different story.
Yeah.
So,
no, I remember like when I was first on the internet, and I've been online for a very long time, everyone was older than me. Fucking everyone.
Yeah.
I was like 15. So it was like everyone. That would put it in like 95 or something. So in 95, there were not a lot of 15 or unders on the internet.
No, not really.
So I was like, I was used to being the young kid. They're like, oh, yeah, I'm like, there's everyone's older than me. And now I'm like, oh, everyone's fucking younger than me now, and it sucks.
Well, I wouldn't say that.
Clearly
I think
not.
But... Yeah, clearly not, yeah. Especially, you come down to America, we got a lot of old people hanging around here, so you'll feel a lot better about yourself. But I don't think of you as old in the least, because even if I had to name off the ages of my friends – I know them, but I have to think about it. If I just off the top of my head just started rambling off ages, I would be fucking wrong 100% of the time.
Dude,
so.
I have to think about my sister's age. I'm like, okay, 1984 plus, okay, 2010. And I have to figure out, okay, so she's, hang on.
She's the
26?
Same age as me.
Yeah. She's a little older than you because she's March.
Well, yeah.
But yeah. God, you're younger than my sister.
I mean, see, that's the thing. I don't. I don't know. I've never thought about that with us. Like, I always know that you're more mature, but I've never thought of you as older.
I understand. No, but, like, whenever I've, like, been interested in women, I'm like, is she older or younger than my sister? So I'm like...
See, that never mattered. That has never mattered. Maybe I'm just a fucking scumbag, but that's never mattered to me, ever. My sister's 23 now, and I've never worried about that.
It's like... okay, yeah, you're also... Okay, so it's the same difference.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, I was thinking the difference was different, but no, this difference is the same. But yeah, no. I just... it's not... I can't do that divided by 2 plus 7 rule, which would put it at 15...
Divided by 2 plus 7, so...
The 15, 22... Yeah. 22 is not so bad.
20? I could do fucking... Yeah, I could do a 20-year-old. I don't care.
I'm well above 18 now, so that's really not... 22 is not so bad.
Actually, now that I think about it, that's actually a pretty good barrier for me, if I think about it, because I wouldn't want to date anybody younger than 20 anyway, because they're fucking annoying as shit. I think the only... I think the biggest surprise I had with ages in the longest time... Because obviously the biggest shock I had for age ever was fucking Panda. Was finding out that that really smart kid that everybody respects and was like, hey, that's fucking Panda. He's a, like, he's that guy. Was like a child internet prodigy.
Wait,
that
how
everyone...
How old's Panda?
Panda is, I think, 24?
Fuck.
I think. I'm not sure. I'm not positive on that. Because again, it's if I think about it for a while, I will come up with the answer. But if I say it off the top of my head, I'll be fucking wrong. I think he's 24.
So Panda was like 14 when I first...
Yeah.
Oh,
yes!
Jesus.
That's what I'm saying. He was a fucking child. Like, he was fucking...
you were at least 16-ish.
Yeah, I was 16 when we met. Yeah. Or internet
quote
met.
Quote unquote met, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Jesus. But the most recent shock was Jess Jupiter was finding out that she's like 19 or so.
No,
she's young.
I think she's 20 now.
Okay, well,
but
when
she's still not legal.
Yeah.
She'll be legal for the next New York Comic Con. I don't think she'll be legal for C2E2, but I'm not sure.
Oh, I don't know. That doesn't matter to
but
me.
But George
fucking...
is the thing is George is 27, 28.
That's another one, George. I was fucking way off. Like I said, anybody in that group, I was way off on. Anybody in my own group, I'm way off. Even, as you know, I started off playing Battlefield last year with a whole bunch of guys on Xbox Live. And the other day, I just played that game where I was like, I'm going to guess your ages. Way the fuck off.
Oh, yeah.
It was all over the place. And most of the time, I was lowballing it by like 3 years at least. So, and that's not like, that's not, has nothing to do with. Wrong way. I was underestimating by 3 years. I don't know. Whatever what I said was they were fucking older and they're actually about 3 years younger. However the wording is, I'm fucking scatterbrained right now. That's what it was. And I always assume that people are older and more mature because I tend to have those friends and I've always tended to have friends that are older and more mature and kind of in the next, even like, I don't even say, you know, along the lines of like, oh, they're, you know, a year or two older than me. They're always in the next stage of life of me. Like right now, I just found out that one of our friends is going to get engaged, and that's
one of our friends or one of your...
No. Somebody I know. Somebody
okay.
I know. I can't say who it is because it's not public yet.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It's one of those things of where I heard that he's thinking about it, and it's going to be a possibility. I think they might be discussing it and whatever. They're not, you know, because they're rational people, and I'm sure they're thinking about it instead of like, because I know that like it's one of those things where most people that get married, it's like, oh, he pops the question or whatever else. Like these guys are like us, where they're kind of like, we need to mull over the tax decisions and so on and so forth regarding marriage. And
it's all the pragmatism.
Like, right on. Yes, fucking. That's how you get married, is so to screw the government. That's about it.
that's the only reason I'd be tempted to get married.
I disagree. I know that even after everything that's happened, I still would get married out of for love and specifically love in the sense that I think there would be long term compatibility. So because that's the only reason I should change that. The only reason I would ever get married outside of a like marriage and convenience is if there was clear love stemming from long term.
Oh, of course,
compatibility.
Of course. So the taxes would be stemming after if I was like Michelle and I, we love each other, we live together, but neither of us see the point in spending a fortune to get it on paper. Like,
yeah.
It's not that I'm in no way against marriage at all.
I am, but
I'm not inherently. I want everyone, gay or straight, to be able to be married, and it pisses me off to no end that in the States, at least, gay men can't, or gay women can't get married to each other.
Yeah.
For the most part, but I'm just like, I don't, since I'm not a religious guy, and in Quebec especially, it's common law stuff is very common.
Yeah.
It's like, I think more than anywhere else in North America, it's the French in us, the crazy Europeanness. I just don't see the point. Like, I don't need to signify my commitment to God in any way. All my friends and family understand that I'm just as committed as it would be otherwise. It's not going to change anything.
Yeah.
I would get divorced as easily as I would break up, basically. It would just cost me less.
It would cost me less.
And if there were crazy tax breaks or something that was blatantly advantageous, I would get married. But otherwise, I'm quite content with how things are now.
Well, here's a shock that, or maybe that, probably you know me well enough that this wouldn't be that much of a shock. But if this was a year ago or even 6 months ago, and Rachel said we have to get married, I would have married her. So that's the thing. I do still think that Rachel and I are long term compatible. It's just, you know, different times in our lives and so on and so forth and that sort of thing. So yeah. I don't know.
Knowing Rachel and you, I definitely don't disagree about that. But the time is not right now.
No, definitely not. No, I understand that, and that's cool. Whatever. So that's another. Maybe that works into what I wanted to talk about this week, which is I don't know. This is actually a much harder topic to talk about than I thought it would be, because I was sitting down before and I was thinking about, like, what I wanted to say, or what do I hit on, like, how do I explain it to people, and, you know, I just, everything I came up with was just, I don't know. I figured I was gonna be like, you know what? I'll just say it to Ryan, and then everybody else will listen, and that'll pretty much be it. So, but you already know.
It's an anniversary of sorts.
It is an anniversary. It is the 5 year. This week, it was the 5 year anniversary of me going into the hospital, and I think that I know that that's a very vague way of saying it, but I'm so used to saying it that way that that's how I've come to say it. Basically, 5 years ago, it was 2005, I was 21. I just turned 21. I was having a lot of problems in my life, and I decided I wanted to kill myself, and I really messed a lot of shit up. I had to drop out of school, and I left college and my friends and everything along those lines, and I ended up, my therapist at the time saw what I had done to my arm, which was severely hurt myself, and I had to be hospitalized. So I went to the hospital and spent a week in a, what's the politically correct term for that? I would say nut house.
I was going to say nut house.
Yeah.
Sanitarium, really, mental institution.
Crisis ward. I think it's, yes. I think the crisis ward is probably accurate. Yeah, that's probably the nicest way to say it, because I know I know that you and I would say, even when I was there, I was like, when people would come visit me, I was like, hey, how are you like in the nut house? Like, this is where I am now, you know. But I know
it's all semantics.
That
let's fuck the is. PC. Whatever you want to call it, what do you want to call it?
If you're there, you know, like, it's not like all of a sudden you're just like, this is great, this is wonderful, like, why don't I not come here sooner? No, there's fucking, no, like, nut jobs. So, like, the guy that I roomed with for the week was just like this, like, I think that's why I grasped so hard onto the Mr. Ball's name, because for a week I felt the fear of I'm going to get raped in my sleep in actuality. Because he was a really big, creepy dude who was clearly meant to be in the fucking nut house, sleeping in the same room as me, and I'm just there, just like, he's gonna rape me, and there's nothing that anybody can do about it, and that's what's gonna happen. But no, he didn't rape me, and that was about it. It was really, I actually, now that I think about it, wow, I actually thought it was one guy. It was two guys, actually. One guy was a really big guy, like a heavy guy, you know, like 300-something pounds.
George,
you know,
sized.
Definitely. Because with George, I would say that George is more like muscle, like George is a
George is a giant of a man.
Yes, exactly. This guy was just like, he was about an inch or two taller than me, and he was just a big dude, like more the Blob than like the Thing. I would say George is like the Thing, and this dude was like the Blob. So I hope that's a compliment to George. He doesn't get fucking pissed off, but he is. He's fucking. He's a brick shithouse, that dude. Yeah. So anyways, and then the guy that replaced him as the week went on was, the closest I could say was the crazy guy from Aqua Teen Hunger Force that comes to buy their house, and he's like, Abba Lama. Like, that was that dude. And the best part about it was, as far as I remember, that show was on the air back then. So like, that was one of the things that went through my mind. I was like, it's the fucking guy from Aqua Teen Hunger Force, yeah. And I'm fucking sleeping right next to him. Jesus Christ. So, yeah, there was – I love how talking with you and talking in front of our friends, I can go off about talking about Aqua Teen Hunger Force and joking about how George is – being serious about how George is a brick shithouse and completely negate the emotional – like, I really – as I was saying, like, we're going to bring it down on this show. I apologize to people that I'm going to be talking about some serious things this week instead of just fucking joking around, and we're –
Oh, we'll do plenty of joking around, I'm sure.
Yeah, we're one step from a dick joke right now, so... Yeah, well, I don't know. I guess getting raped technically is a dick joke.
Technically.
Because there's a dick involved there, well, and it's right up the ass, so...
Something that just popped in my head that I didn't actually know, so I'm going to ask you now, because I heard about this 5 years ago, so I'm mostly well-versed in the story. Did you commit yourself, or how did you get in there?
Okay, here's something. If anybody is ever thinking about checking themselves into the nut house, be aware that you... I would never say don't get help, because I think that goes without saying. I think that if you ever need any sort of help, if you need somebody to talk to, Ryan and I here to – anybody who's listening to this, I think you have a pretty good idea how to get a hold of us, and you can always talk to me about this. I've been through it myself. Don't do anything crazy or don't do anything ever with any of that kind of stuff, because I know – I've lived my entire life with this stuff, and I know how hard it is to deal with it and how hard it is to go day in, day out with it. I totally understand, but you really do need to get help in any sort of way, and I don't mean to say this as don't get help, but I kind of checked myself in. I guess technically I did. I was brought there by my therapist in a cop car, which was a shock to begin with, because they had to, because of liability issues, my therapist said, okay, because she was a college therapist. She was there employed by the university. So she called the cops and she said, we needed to go to the hospital and drive him to the hospital. So they put me in the back of the cop car and we drove to the hospital. And I got there and I just sat there for hours and hours and hours. I got my appointment with her was at 10, and I still remember sitting there until at least 7. And Jesus. Just yeah, and that's why anytime anybody ever says anything about like the American hospital system,
yeah, I was
going
to say, I thought our waiting times were terrible.
Yeah, F that. I have great insurance. Especially back then, I had fantastic insurance through my dad, the best of the best insurance that you could get, and it was still. Just fucking abysmal. And especially considering that I understand that it's one of those things where there's a lot of clerical issues, and I'm sure that if anybody ever works in a hospital, they're probably going to bitch slap me for saying anything bad about the process. But because
aware that the process is as ridiculous as it needs to be, and I'm sure they'd rather be as efficient as possible, not to deal with all the red tape. People I know that work in that field are like, don't let the bureaucracy any more than we do. They just know it's a necessary evil.
Well, that's good to hear, because that was what I was going to say. Is I think it's absolute bullshit that I, as a 21-year-old guy that was about to kill himself, that they go, okay, now you're going to sit in the fucking waiting room for about 12 hours. You know, that drove me out of my fucking skull, especially considering that with that sort of thing, you – In the crisis ward, I think it's fair to call it that, when they admit you, you can go in during the day and everyone's there and they're happy and they're doing activities and everything. But the place shuts down at 7 o'clock. So I got there after everything had shut down and they got me a cold hamburger and said, here's a cold hamburger to eat. Here's a bunch of paperwork. You know, we got to know more about you. Fill out some more paperwork and so on and so forth. And then they, you know, like take off your clothes, put on the fucking gown. They have to inspect you for everything and they go over it. It's kind of like it really did feel like in the beginning, like, I don't really know much about prison, but I know the Shawshank Redemption, and it was sort of like in the Shawshank Redemption where everyone strips naked and they're just like throwing the fucking whatever, the de-lousing powder and stuff at them. And it really felt like that, because another thing too was that they did it all in front of everybody, which really annoyed the piss out of me, because another thing too is that there's nothing going on. It's after 7 o'clock and there's, I don't know, I'd say about 20-30 people in the crisis ward, so they're just walking around doing whatever. So they did it right by the nurse's station, which was in the middle of everything. So I'm just standing there like half naked in this fucking really, you know, like literally paper thin gown. But I'm like, all right, everyone's seen my ass now. Awesome. So that's great. And standing here and so on and so forth. Like, really kind of like not the process you want to – not anything – I guess it makes sense because they keep an eye on you so you can't kill yourself. But really not the idea that you want to be going with if you are doing that. I would definitely – I think now if I had to talk to anybody who was going through that, I would say that alone is reason to get help early and often. Because if you have psychological problems and you're letting it go to the conclusion of where you're going to kill yourself and you check yourself in the hospital, do so if it's gotten to that point. Don't kill yourself. I would never tell it to anybody. I don't think that 5 years later, I can specifically and clearly and with a lot of experience say it's nowhere near as bad as you think it is, because right now there's probably a lot of people that love you. There's a lot of people that care about you. We love you. We care about you. There's lots of help that you could be getting, even in a situation where I was unwilling to even use my health insurance because I was trying to separate myself from my parents. I was still able to get free care, and I was still able to get a lot of help from people. And it shouldn't have gone to the level it went to. It was just because I waited until – I only went to go see a therapist about 2-3 months before that even happened. So – and that's – and I had never seen a therapist until I was 20, and then I turned 21, and then I went to the hospital. So like I turned 21 in the time period it took to go see that therapist. So it was one of those things where I really needed to get help and I didn't. And now I have help. I do have people that I see and deal with, and I'm doing much better and so on and so forth, but then not so much. So if you – I would say that if I could have any sort of recommendation, it would be never, ever, ever let it get to that point, because the crisis wards, at least the one I went to and what I've learned from other people in outpatient and everything since, is that you're – unless you are ridiculously rich or you live in a ridiculously rich area, you're going to end up in a crisis ward where there's a bunch of fucking people who are way crazier than you are. And at the very least, it might be a good thing for you, because I got a fucking ridiculous wake-up call when I went there. Mm-hmm. Because even the first 10 minutes of being there, they came over and they said, we're gonna give you Zoloft. And I said, well, whatever. And then they gave me Zoloft, and they gave me something else, and they didn't tell me what it was I don't remember what it was. I know they didn't tell me at first. They told me it was Zoloft later, but they gave me a bunch of pills. I took them. And it was clear that I've done drugs and I understand what drugs do. And I'm assuming it was a sedative that they gave me.
Yeah.
And I was just sitting there just like, fading fast. And I'm sitting there in the activities room, and a guy walked over to me and he goes, so what are you in for? And I'm like, just whatever, man. I don't even know what I even said. I'm assuming it was something along those lines. I just like kind of blew him off. And he immediately started talking about how he was addicted to crack. And he was a businessman in New York City that was addicted to crack. And he was just really, really happy about drugs. And the best part about it was that he was getting released soon so he could go out and do more drugs. So at the very least, the thing that was going through my head was, I'm here to get help. I'm getting help. And I'm going to get out of the hospital and things are going to get better in my life. And here is this guy who immediately is telling me, I can't wait to get out of the hospital so I can do more drugs. This is great.
Yeah, he's like work mandated. You have to go here because you're clearly a drug addict. But he's like, I don't give a shit. I'm going to just do this time and then come out and start doing crack again.
Yeah, exactly. For a lot of people, it's just time. It's no different than prison. It's a week or two or whatever they got to be in there for. And they just say, fuck it, whatever, and who cares. For me, it turned out to be a week, because I learned very quickly, even though I checked myself in, I couldn't readily check myself out. They did everything in their power to make sure I didn't check myself out, and I don't think that I deserve to stay there the whole week, but I I look back on it now, and it's not like it fucking hurt me in any way, and I just got a lot of goofy stories out of it, so, you know, whatever. Like, then it was hell on earth. Like, I remember they were saying that they were going to keep me for the weekend, because I went in on Monday, I got out on Friday, so 5 days, you know. Yeah. It was there, not even a week, but I was there for 5 days, and then they were saying, like, we're going to keep you over the weekend. And I was just like, no, sweet God, no, especially because as the week went on, they just picked up more and more people, because I guess that's the way it works, is that my doctor called around to find an open bed, and this place just had open beds, so that's where I went.
Okay.
And that's how it works. So I guess when they have open beds, they just, like, it's just like it's pretty much the opposite of what you'd think it would be, where everyone just gets funneled into that one area. It's not like, hey, this person should go here because they need this kind of help. Like, no, it doesn't matter. Even a lot of the people that we were dealing with, I was dealing with in there, a lot of them were people that were there like me, where they were depressed and they tried to kill themselves, or they just tried to kill themselves because the fucking great banana in the sky said to, or whatever the reason was. But there's a lot of other people that were there, like the two guys that I roomed with were there as like their wards of the state, so they know like they're not there, and they know that they're not really workable. Like, it's just they're there temporarily as they get shifted to another institution. Mm-hmm. So, like I said, you end up there. Like there was I love the McPoyles on Sunny.
Oh,
because the sister reminds me of one of the patients that was there in the hospital.
Constantly licking her lips?
Yes.
That's awful.
The best part was the first breakfast I had there, I'm sitting there just eating my stuff, and there was a guy there with me. I think his name was Harry. I think his name was Harry, because I think I remember that because my grandfather's name is Harry.
Yeah.
So I think it was Harry. And he was not really there, and he had a lot of problems with motor control and things like that. Like, there's something more wrong with him than just was wrong with me, clearly. And he sat down with me at breakfast, and he said, could you please open my juice for me? And I was like, yeah, of course. Of course I can open juice. And then that's when it hit me, where I was like, holy shit, this dude can't open his own juice. I shouldn't be here. You know, like, that I really – my life was a mess, and I still to this day, I deal with a lot of problems that, you know, stem from all kinds of stuff, but I can open juice. Like, that is, you know, and so, you know, it was that, like, you know, shocking realization, like, holy shit, this is fucked up, I shouldn't be here, and I fucked up, and I really need to change my life. And then immediately after that, the fucking McPoyle sister, and she was, like, a heavier set woman, walks over and just grabs a biscuit off somebody's plate and just starts licking it and just starts away. Yeah, and the nurses are like, hey, you know you're not allowed to do that. You're just picking off people's plates. And the woman goes, well, now I'm done with breakfast, I guess, and just pushes her plate away and walks away. I was like, holy shit, this is the nut house. Like, they were right. They were spot on. Anything anyone's ever told you about a crisis ward where there's a lot of people who are psychologically, because that's the thing, it's not like you're just there and there's doctors helping you. Most of the time, there's nobody around except you and them. And I don't mean to say them as looking down on them or anything like that, or anybody who has problems. And I'm sure, because there were lots of people there that were way better off than me, and I'm sure they were exhausted or whatever the reason that they were there for was. There was one really nice woman that was there, and her kids would visit her every single day. And she was like, you could tell that she was there because she needed help, and she was getting the help that she needed, and it was wonderful and great.
Yep.
And holy shit, like, my heart goes out to anybody like that. But I can't help but laugh, because that's my reaction to cope with things when I see the fucking McPoyle sister walking around licking somebody's biscuit. Or there was the other one that always, like, because whenever anybody ever talks to me about this stuff, they're like, you, because obviously on my arm, you can still see I have scars on my arm and everything.
Really? I haven't noticed it at all.
I tend to wear
long sleeve shirts. Admittedly, I haven't seen you a ton of times since in real life. But I haven't noticed. I also have a look, because I know you're better, but I just haven't noticed.
Yeah, I'm a little self-conscious about it. But for the most part, it's not really something that people notice, because they don't think about that kind of shit. It's really, really, of all the people I've ever talked to about it that have pointed it out, they've had problems of their own. And they're like, holy shit, you fucking did that to your arm. And I'm like, oh, Jesus. And immediately the answer or whatever the conversation turns to, no, I am, you know, I had problems too, or I have problems now, and I want to talk to you about that. So if anything, I am self-conscious of it, but I try not to hide it so much anymore, because I'd rather somebody talk to me about it if they want to, because I'd rather talk to somebody about it instead of keeping it a secret, because it's like the same reason I'm talking to you about this now. I'm fine with it now. I mean, I'm okay. It's 5 years later. My life is much better now than it was then, and I know that what happened then could have been avoided. And I know that I'm glad every single day that I didn't kill myself, that I did get help. You know, the hospital's nuts, and I do talk about it when people bring it up. And the thing I always talk about is basically if you ever really, I remember somebody was saying that there was a book or something that came out recently. I mean, not recently, probably within the last like 3 or 4 years, where somebody, I know there was the movie, the fucking movie with Zach Galifianakis where the kid checks himself into
Due Date. Oh, not Due Date. Oh, what's the fucking called?
No, it's
it just came out. It was the kid with Keira Gilchrist from
Another Funny Story or something, or
What's his name?
I don't remember.
I'll have it in a second. Carry on.
Okay. Well, okay. So basically, the story. When people respond to this, they always when they talk to me about it, they always bring up stuff like that, and I always say that it's a great place to go if you ever want anything to write about, because that's why I've always wanted to write a book about that time in my life, because so much crazy, literally crazy shit was happening to me. I mean, like, I've had, I am not schizophrenic. I suffer from depression and general anxiety disorder. So they're not really, they're typical. I mean, not that I said that they're average things. Your average person,
they're more manageable than schizophrenia.
Oh, they're way more manageable, and they're way more common than schizophrenia.
Oh yeah, and the movie is, it's kind of a funny story.
There you go.
With Keira Gilchrist and Zach Galifianakis, and Keir Gilchrist is the guy from is the son on United States of Terra.
Okay.
Speaking of schizophrenia, but speaking of multiple personality disorder.
Yes.
Which is also a crazy thing that no one should deal with if they can avoid it.
Yes. Yeah. I know I can have it a lot worse, and that's another thing too, is that I always try to keep this shit in context, specifically by telling the story of I had to go to group therapy, because I quickly became this weird like pet project for all the nurses, or at least was one nurse in particular, because I would just, all my friends came and they dropped off clothes, because that was another thing too, is if you're going to go to the crisis ward, please do. I know that it's something that is really bothering you and you need help and so on and so forth and you want to go right away, please get help, but also remember to pack a fucking overnight bag, because I walked in there with the clothes on my back and that was it. And that is a terrible fucking idea, because the place that I went to, they had basically nothing. It was like, here's a hospital gown, and that was it. Your friends will bring you clothes later. So my friends didn't know. I mean, they had an idea, but they didn't really know. So they had, it was only a day later, like 24 hours later or so, that they dropped off some clothes for me and shit to actually wear and so on and so forth. And they know I like to read, and there's pretty much nothing but time for that, you know, 5 or 6 days that you'll be in the hospital. So yeah. I spent a lot of time reading, and I played a lot. Like the one thing I did, I gathered up all the, and I'm sure it hurt my cause more than it helped my cause, but I gathered up all the memos and I was proofreading the memos. And by the way, people in hospitals can't spell for shit. That was the thing I learned that week, was that even with spell check, they were just fucking, like, every memo I found was at least like 5 or 6 spelling errors, or just the complete wrong word that they should have been using. So anyways, people are people, even in hospitals.
People are people.
That's right. So I had to go. They kept trying to get me out of the room and to stop reading and to be more social and so on and so forth, because that's not really, what's that? What's so funny?
Just you trying to get out of the room. Trying to get you to stop reading. It was that phrase that made me laugh. Because I know how much you like reading in general. It's not that you're being antisocial. It's just you're like, I want to read something right now. It's like, this is what I want to do.
Yeah, exactly. That was my sign to them that I'm less depressed, is because I'm sitting and doing something I want to do instead of sitting there like, I want to die. I'm sitting there and I will never forget the fucking books that I read there, because it was Microsurfs by Douglas Copeland. It was The Killer Angels by Michael Shera. It's about the fucking Battle of Gettysburg, and the fucking first Kevin Smith book, whatever his first, I forget, it's, I think it's Simon Bob Speaks, I think it was.
It is.
Yeah, so there you go. So I had those three books, and I read them like crazy. I read this. I read the Kevin Smith book twice while I was in the hospital. So that's like, because I was there for that long, and yeah, and I was just bored, and I just would rather read that book than talk to anybody in the hospital. But I mean, there, like I said, there were really nice people there, and I wish I had been a little more friendly with them. But then I got roped into going to my first ever group meeting in the hospital. And I sat down there, and they go around the circle. Everybody talks, you know, everybody says their name and so on. Like, pretty much what you've seen on TV about AA meetings or whatever else. And everybody introduces themselves, and then they say, okay, we're going to talk about group. And, like, what are we having a problem with this week, or what are we talking about? And I think we were talking about friends. We were talking about – because it was right – it was this beginning of December. What's that?
Actual, like, people you are friends with, or the TV series?
No. Surprisingly, we're not talking about Jennifer Aniston in the hospital. No,
we're going to make sure.
Yeah, we're talking about actual people like that, like actual people that you are friends with, and how to make more friends and how to be more social. And I think that, because that was the idea. Like, they were trying to like get me out to this group meeting that was about being social, so that I would come out of my shell a little bit. But it would maybe go into my shell way further and just hide in my shell as much as possible, because they got to this woman who, again, and I keep – like feeling like it's such a dick because I'm making fun of these people, and I know they just needed help like I do, and I'm sure, and it sucks. And some people always like, I believe in God, and they're so religious and everything. Like, I've never had religion, because I've always had, for at least for the majority of my life, I've had psychological problems. At least from the age of reasoning onward, I've had psychological problems that needed to be dealt with. And I've never really had a lot of faith in any sort of higher power, because it's fucking biology. It's all it is. It's just these people drew the fucking card, and it said crazy, and that's it. And then they were born that way, and they're fucked, and there's nothing you can do about it. So this poor woman, get to her, who, and they go, how do you make friends? And she goes, well, I don't really like to make friends. And the nurse prods her, and, you know, like, well, what do you mean? You know, who doesn't like to make friends? Why would you say that? Everybody likes to have friends. Why would you say you don't like to make friends? And she goes, well, the voice in my head the voice in my head tells me to make friends. And the nurse goes, okay. Like, well, at least that's positive. Like, you know, you can make friends. And she goes, but then the voice tells me to hurt them.
Oh, fuck. Yeah, I was going to say, everyone likes to have friends. No one likes to make friends.
Yeah, I think that.
But when you said the voice in my head says that, I'm like, okay, I'm going to back away. Joe continue, and he'll finish his story.
Like, exactly. Yeah, but that's when you stop dead, when she says, like, the voice in my head, and, like, we need to know more about this. Tell us what the voice says, because the voice might be telling you to make cookies for everybody, and who doesn't like cookies? But more often than not, the voice, like, people don't.
Yeah, no one ever has a voice in their head that says, make lots of cookies and be nice to people.
I have a voice in my head that says that,
but it doesn't mean it's like it's a voice. It's just like, that's being a nice person. It's making cookies and being nice. It's not a voice in my head telling me to do so. The voices in your head are always like, you should make friends, and then stab them in the throat. Or like, you should jerk off on the corpses of babies. Like, it's always something terrible.
Pull your dick out on the bus.
Exactly.
Yeah. So,
to be fair, Michelle, for those of you who don't know, Michelle is my girlfriend, essentially wife. Michelle is my girlfriend, who I've lived with for several years now. She is working on her master's and works out of the main English Montreal mental institution, but on rats, not on people. So I hear lots of stories about crazy people.
Yeah.
But really crazy people. Not like Joe crazy people, like crazy fucking people. So I hear a lot about this regularly. So it's not, and not that what Joe went through is not a big deal, because it is. He went through a shitty time, and he's better for it, because I know he's better for it. But I'm just, that's why I can picture these crazy people in my head so clearly, because I've seen or met the guy with no face that's crazy, or the guy that walks around and prophesizes things, or all these people are people I have seen in real life up close with my windows rolled up and my car door locked securely, but I've seen it in real life.
Yeah. But I think that it's hard. I don't know how to justify how I look at that situation, because I know that there's a very it really is. You swap a little bit of shit in my brain, chemical wise, one way or another, and I'm jabbering on a fucking, you know, box, you know, on a street, like on a milk carton on a street, you know, street container, like a street corner, like, ah, fucking Jesus is coming back and Thor's telling me to kill people.
The people,
you know.
And the people I hear of are lifers. They're the people that live at this hospital. They're not like, I don't ever hear stories about the day or week. The people that come in every day to get help and get better, or the people that live there for like a week or two at a time, I hear people that are, because in Quebec, years ago now, I'm not going to say a number, but years ago now, they decided to basically shut down a lot of the mental, the psychiatric hospitals, will be appropriate here, and a lot of the people are now on the streets because they're for lack of a better term, fucked up and can't really function in society.
Yeah.
And some of the people were so fucked up that they just stayed living in these places and are going to live there until they die. There are people that Michelle not knows but recognizes under some code name as this is their psychosis that just disappears someday because you don't know these people. They live somewhere in the hospital. It's a giant campus in Montreal. I'm talking about the Douglas Hospital if there's any Montrealers listening. It's a giant campus, and there's some people that live in it, and they just disappear someday. You're not going to know that they die. You're not going to know that they got checked out. They just disappear. And chances are, if they're old, that they died. And they just died living most of their lives in this hospital. And that's terrifying and terrible, but some people just don't get better and need to live in this kind of environment. And Joe is not this person, clearly. Joey lived there for a week and recognized that this is one flew over the cuckoo's nest and these are severely crazy people that need to be in here all the time. And Joey had severe depression, needed to get out of it, and checked in and saw and got better because of it, ultimately.
Yes.
And moving on.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I know we're running long on time here. I know that I said I want to do half an hour episodes, and I know this is kind of like an afternoon special type episode. But I figured I'd close with one story that I think that no matter how you look at it, it's funny. If there's really someone who's been that offended by what we're saying, and I really hope they're not, because like I said, I live with this. This is me. I mean, I laugh at myself as much as anybody else does. I really thought it was funny that when I was in college, there were a lot of Joes. And so, like, within the first, like, month or two of college, everyone called me Crazy Joe. And then one day, Crazy Joe went to the fucking mental institution, and everyone was like, holy shit, he's actually crazy. So, you know, it wasn't just wacky, you know. And I try to be a positive dude. I try to be very out there and try to be, you know, like the dude who gives everybody a hug, because, you know, that's the thing. I do also live with this other part of me that I don't really, you know, want to deal with. You know, Rachel, part of the reason why things never worked out between me and Rachel, and it wasn't the right time, was because of it. It is right there. That's it. It's because of this. It's because I have two parts of me, and one part I really like and one part I really don't. But I got to live with both, and that's what it is. And like I said, the only thing I can do is laugh at myself, and that's what this is. If you're offended, I'm sorry. And I don't mean to laugh at you. I'm not laughing at anybody who has any sort of mental problems. I'm sorry that you have mental problems. I fucking know. I've had to deal with this all of my adult life, most of my life in general. So I understand where you're coming from. And like I said before, we love you. We hope that if anybody out there is listening to this and you do have any sorts of problems with depression or anxiety or schizophrenia or any sort of anything whatsoever, even if you just stubbed your toe and you know, you're just a little angry, you know, we love you. We care about you. Don't do anything rash. You know, don't do anything like this. I mean, try to get help. That's what it comes down to. But
definitely.
I know. I figure you really didn't have to sign off like, no, fuck them. Fuck them. They should jump into traffic.
Well, I have not ever been in been that bad at any point. Clearly, you could talk to me or Joey at any point if you need to. We're your friends. If you can't talk to your friends, who the fuck can you talk to?
Exactly. That was the main thing that kept me going and still keeps me going to this day, is that I have never really had 100% family support backing me, but I've always had my friends. Always. My friends were the ones that brought me clothes in the hospital. They're the ones that visited me all the time in the hospital. They're the ones that took care of me after I got out of the hospital. They, you know, my friends did just about everything for me back then, and I love them for it. And I still to this day sit around thinking, and I get a little bit down about it because I've never really been able to repay my friends for everything that they've done.
We don't need repayment.
But yeah, that's kind of the thing.
We don't.
I think. Yeah, that's, well, I'm not saying that you don't need repayment, but the thing I was thinking about it was I never want to repay you at all because I don't know what that would mean. You know, I would never want anyone to be in that position where they need to be repaid for what they did for me because I would never wish that on anybody. It's not good. But anyways, to end the show on a lighter note. We were in I was in college back then, and we had constant problems in the dorms with fires all the time. Well, not even fires, just fucking idiots that were smoking weed or smoking a cigarette, or they left their toaster on for too long.
Smoking weed, come on.
No. There's nothing wrong with smoking weed as long as you cover up the smoke detector, which is connected to the whole rest of the fucking dorm, so it sets up the fucking smoke detector in the middle of the night, you fucking jerk off. I know. I say you hotbox the shit of that room. Just fucking fix
the take the battery out
detector.
First.
Take the battery out.
Yeah, yeah, I understand.
Jerk off. So, yeah. So, anyways, we always got kicked out of the dorms a lot because of smoke detectors going off and having to stand outside. And I had it – this was about a month before I went in the hospital. It was in my mind that I knew that I needed to get help, and my therapist was saying that the hospital was an option about a month before I actually went in the hospital. So that's what I was saying. Like, my friends knew that it was going to happen before it happened, but they didn't – nobody really know. Like, nobody's ready for that, you know, obviously. So I had this idea that this was going to happen maybe soon because I knew that and that's the thing. I knew that I wanted to probably kill myself, but I didn't want to, if that makes any sense. And then
I would have been pissed.
Yeah, I know. So I think everybody would have been pissed. At least I hope. I hope no one was like, yeah, fuck him. But, you know, anyways, again, to try to be positive and try to be funny, as this is supposed to be a funny podcast, or at least I hope it is. The idea was that I kept thinking about this shit, going over every little thing, like what's the food going to taste like in the hospital, like what am I going to be able to, like how am I sleeping there, like am I going to sleep on the floor, like whatever. All these weird ideas kept coming to my head. So I turned to my cousin, who also went to college with me, and I said, do you think that in psychiatric wards, like what do they do when a smoke detector goes off? If there's a fire in the hospital, do they just let all the crazy people out, like just to run around outside for a while, or like what do they do? You know, like I don't understand. So sure enough, like I said, I was there from Monday to Friday. Friday afternoon, 3 hours before I was scheduled to get released, the fucking fire alarm goes off. There was a fire in the hospital.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
Like, a legit fire? Like, not just a
legit
trail?
Fire. Like, the fucking
oh, fuck.
Like, the fire department showed up and everything along those lines and whatever. So part of me was like, holy shit, I get an answer. Because I'm a very curious guy. So I was like, holy shit, I got an answer to my fucking question. How crazy is that? And the other part of me is like, holy shit, there's a fire in the hospital. I no longer want to die. I want to get out of here and get better. You know, I'm getting released in 3 hours. Jesus, what the hell? So all of a sudden, half of the nurses go one way, and half of the nurses start saying, all right, everybody, move to the back, move to the back, go to the activities room. Well, what? You know, like, what do you mean go to the activities room? Like, there's a fire. Is there an exit through the activities room? I thought it was just one door that goes in there, and it's a closed-off room. Like, I didn't know that. Oh, wait, it is just one door, and it's a totally closed-off room. They locked us in the activities room during the fire. Because they figure that what they do is they go outside and they tell the fire department and they say, hey, listen, we've got, you know, 30 or so patients inside that have psychological problems. They're in this more or less safe area. Because I know that the hospitals are sectioned off. So it's like I would assume the chances of a hospital burning to the ground is they're pretty slim to none. But, you know, the idea is because everything's segmented and segregated by fire doors and stuff like that. But still, to be in a building that's on fire, not a huge fan of that. Like that, I wouldn't recommend that to anybody. It was really nerve wracking, and I'm a nervous guy to begin with. And that just, you know, and then to add to it, they jam all these crazy people, including me. I would say I'm a crazy person. Whatever, I got jammed in there too with two nurses to 30 people to 30 patients.
That's, and, if they're all you, it's one thing, but No, they are not.
They are not all me. There was one kid in particular that was like, he was like Rufio, like of the crazy people. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, he's like, Bangarang, motherfucker, we gotta overthrow these two nurses and take this fucking place over. Pan's gone! I'm burning this shit to the ground!
I love Hook more than I should. I love that movie. If it's on TV, I will watch it in its entirety. I love that movie. I still will watch it. I don't care.
It was the last movie I got to see with my grandfather, so it holds a place in my heart as well. But I will still always, it always has a blemish there, because I always now think of fucking Pan, or I think of Hook, you know, when I'm thinking of the fucking hospital. Because this kid was, he had the same kind of like, he didn't have the red highlights, but he had the crazy black hair, and he was kind of swarthy looking like Rufio was.
Did he skateboard a lot?
No, I don't know, because he was just out of his fucking mind. Like, the night before, my room was across from this empty room, and I didn't know what the empty room was. And apparently the empty room was, like, the padded room that they throw people in when they have to have a timeout. So they dragged him over there, threw him in the room, and they just closed the door. So I'm across the hall reading from this kid banging on the door and screaming, I'm going to fucking rape you, you piece of shit, and so on and so forth. I'm like... like, this guy, he's got fucking problems, you know, like, real fucking problems. And now I'm locked in a room with him, and there's only two nurses there. Was it?
Or across from him.
No. During the fire drill, they
locked. Oh, shit, really?
Yeah. It was really that moment with, you know, from, like, the Watchmen movie where, Watchmen movie. I'm such a jackass. Because I think I was about to say it. And I wanted to say it like Jackie Earle Haley did when he was playing Rorschach in the prison, and he turns and he had a really deep voice, like, "I'm not in here with you. You're in here with me." Like that sort of moment, and you're just sitting there, like, "I don't want to be in here with him. Let me at it. I'll go deal with the fire. I don't want to deal with that fucking kid because there's two nurses in here. They're both women and they're both older, and I can fucking take them myself." And that kid's fucking crazy. So I don't even want to know what he's going to do to any one of us whatsoever. So it was a really, really – like that defined the hospital for me. Just the point where it was that exact moment, if no other moment, that I said, I got to get better. I'm never coming back here ever again. Sweet Jesus, I'm never going back to the hospital. Like if I need the help, I swear to myself I will get it. I don't want to be needing help. But I don't want to come back here with Rufio and the fucking biscuit liquor and the other woman that was going to kill her friends. You know, like those people need help and I'm glad they're getting help. And I hope that their lives improve in the same way that my life improved. I don't want to see them ever again, if at all possible. That's the one thing I will say about that. So maybe that's the harshest thing that will really, truthfully, like in my heart, that's the meanest thing I can say, is that I don't want to see those fucking people again ever. So
which is fair, because you're not as crazy as them.
I think it's reasonable, yeah.
But to be fair, whenever you disappear from AIM for like a couple weeks at a time, I was a little concerned that. Fuck, Joe was doing so well. Where'd he go?
Because most of the time
you are doing well. I'm like, I assume initially after we'll call it the incident, for lack of a better term. That was my main thought. I assume it's a family issue where your grandparents are sick or whatever, because you still have living grandparents and they get sick as they do.
I will go so far as to say that this year, 2010, for about a good 6 months, I think I kind of dropped off the radar.
You did.
Early in
2010, but yeah, you did.
Well, I think it's even more obvious because people can look at the fucking episode fucking numbers and times and everything for Internet Boyfriends. There's a reason there's a gap there. It's because I've been having problems and I'm better now. But, it's one of those things. You always have it's with me. It's going to be with me for the rest of my life. You know, one of my favorite writers is Hunter S. Thompson, and he lived with this kind of shit his whole life. You know, and obviously he went in a direction where he didn't get the help that he needed, and he eventually killed himself. And that's really sad, especially considering I love him as a writer, and I think he's a great man, and I wish that he was still around writing today. But I understand his reasoning, and I can't say the one thing really in my heart, I can't say that I am going to go the rest of my life and be 100% okay with what's wrong with me. I always am going to have problems. I'm always going to have little relapses here and there. I'm really trying to make sure that I'm going forward instead of backward.
Of course.
But there's always little problems along the way. It's just, how do you stop those little problems from turning into bigger problems? And luckily, I've been seeing a therapist, and I've been getting help, and I've been trying to, you know, turn things around. So, you know, obviously my relationship ended with Rachel, and that really fucking rips me up, and I'm obviously sad about that. But if anything, I think it shows my therapist, for one, you know, was really impressed with me, because I broke up with Rachel, broke up with me, and then immediately it turned into, how do I turn this into a positive experience? And that's the kind of person I am now. How do I turn this into something good in my life? It's something that happened that I think is terrible. I want to make positive change in my life, and so on and so forth. So that's maybe the note I'll end it on, because I know we just hit the hour mark of recording, but I don't think it's going to turn out to be an hour. So,
and so I'd kick your ass if you're feeling otherwise.
Yeah, I know. I think everybody would. And I would totally kick somebody else's ass if they were feeling that way too, because you got to be fucking positive. Whether you have problems or you're just a normal fucking person, you know, you just fucking be positive. We're stuck here on this fucking planet.
Let's make the best of it.
Yeah, exactly. So maybe that should be our sign-off. We're all stuck here together, bitches.
Life sucks. Let's make it as good as we can.
Yep. So with that, it's another week of Internet Boyfriends. I don't think we still have we don't have a sign-off. I know that last week we were saying that we wanted to hear from you, the listeners, to hear what we should end the show with, but I don't know if those episodes are ever going to go out. So I'm saying it now. If you feel like Ryan and I should have a joint, like, you know, Shalil, Shamazzle, Pasta and Theft Incorporated, you know, like little ending song or something. Maybe you should write us and say, hey, you guys should sing or do something. I know dancing. I was gonna say dancing, but that's fucking stupid.
Dancing is a visual thing, and
dancing is a visual thing.
Yep. I could dance out right now, and in theory, I could be right now, but you'll never know.
What is it? Was that Laverne and Shirley, the thing I just did?
Shlemiel Shamazzle, yeah. Definitely Laverne and Shirley.
Yeah, I was doing a little dance as I did the Laverne and Shirley thing.
I just unplugged my laptop and did a dance around the room, but no one will actually can. No one can tell that, except I may be lying, I may be not be, but you'll never know.
I believe you.
You
I believe
do,
you, sweetheart.
Because I was. And I wouldn't lie to you.
Until next week.
I'm Ryan, aka @Gobo on Twitter.
And I'm Joey at Mr. Balls on Twitter. And thank you for listening to Internet Boyfriends.
Take it easy.